Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Aetherius Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the barriers between religion, science, metaphysics, philosophy, and mysticism, all of which are really only aspects of the self-same quest for truth. Please note, this is an independent program not produced or fact-checked by the Aetherius Society. Today, our guest is Claire Goldsberry. Hello, Claire.
Hello. Hi, Claire. Hi, nice to meet you.
Enjoy.
Yeah, and I'm really pleased that you've joined us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the big question Deborah's picked out is how to die well.
A cheerful
episode. Go down smiling. So what can you tell us about that? How have you come across this?
Well, my most recent book is The Illusion of Life and Death, Mind, Consciousness, and Eternal Being. And I think that topic came about because I had the pleasure, the privilege of helping my significant other have a good death. You know, and what is a good death? Well, a good death is just a death without fear. It's not being attached to the things of this life and being able to embrace all as our path, whatever that path is.
So how did he prepare to pass, if that's not too personal a question?
He really didn't. He just was the type of person that always embraced anything that came along in life. He was a very happy person. He didn't really know anything about much about religion. He wasn't a religious person. When he and I met, he didn't know anything about Buddhism. I really didn't know a whole lot at the time, other than we shouldn't become attached to things in this life. And so I would say he prepared for death, because he was always prepared, because he had a good life. He just enjoyed life. Everything that he did, he enjoyed. And I think that's the only way to prepare. If you live a fearless life, then you're always prepared for your death.
Yeah, and I can get that, because of course, if you're living without fear, your vibrations are really high. So you're in your best possible mind state to transcend onto a realm that is vibrating at your level or higher. We're told within teachings, and this is my words, I'm not reading from any of the books here, but we're told that if people die in trauma, if there's a really bad accident or a fire or what, so, you know, karmically, that they've got to die by fire or trauma or whatever it is, or within chaos, then that really like bends them out of shape, if you want to, you know, not only their physical body, but their auric bodies and all sorts. And then they arrive into the next stage up, which we understood is the realm of waiting, where they're attended to just by people trying to get them back to realizing, look, hey, it's okay, and this is, you're here now, and now we've got to get you ready for the next bit on. And so we're told that it's really, really important that you die knowing. So in other words, die in a healthy space. And I'm going to keep talking just a little bit more, because there's an attachment to that. I know that in the Buddhist in the Buddhist believings, that when you get to a certain level, you know when you're going to die. Like, so when you're elevated, as I guess in any religion, you know, and you plan it, and you know. So you then make the preparations so that it's as pleasant as possible for you then to go in your time and place. Third thing, Dr. King, we are told, prepared. He knew exactly when he was going to go, and he had aides round his bed, and he said, look, the time has come. And so they phoned our head office and got some what we call spiritual energy radiators going, which transmits spiritual energy to any given point. So they transmitted this energy into his bedroom to raise the vibrations all around him to make his journey easier. And so he was able to do manipulations that he wouldn't have been able to do if he'd gone in by the side of the freeway or something, because he was able to like do the last gift back to us just as he was passing, because everything was prepared for him. So that's a really is it my show, Joe, Jack? Because I seem to
rather she's had a coffee. I'm sorry, Claire.
Yeah, please, I know. Never ever allow me caffeine. How does
she's just enthusiastic
you?
About death, you know? She's getting there.
Well, I will add that, yes, I think a lot of people, we don't always have control over when we die or how we die. And in fact, in the Buddhist philosophy, they say, death is certain. The time of our death is uncertain, because it can actually happen at any time. Some people, Sri Aurobindo was, I believe, like Dr. King, and he knew when he was going to die, and he was able to prepare for that. We don't always know exactly when we're going to die. But sometimes it is a shock. You know, if somebody gets, like you said, suddenly in a fire, or killed in a car wreck, or, you know, suddenly like that, to be suddenly out of the body and to go, wow, you know, because we're so identified with our bodies. It's the one thing that we're attached to most of all is our bodies. And when we suddenly find ourselves out of our bodies, it's difficult. I think it would be difficult to deal with. If we haven't prepared in a way that it's just knowing that at any time we can die. And I think that's the important thing, is just to know in the Buddhist philosophy, we meditate on our own death and know that death is just right here. It's just always right there. And to be prepared for that just means being able to just to move through life, to be fearless about it, but so that when it does happen, we're not shocked. Because even though everybody says, yeah, we're all going to die. Yeah, I know that. We're all going to die. Do people really believe it? Probably not. Because we all just think we're going to live forever, you know. And so that's what makes it difficult for people when they have this idea that, I know I'm going to die, but not today, not this week, not this year. You know, I have plans for when I'm 85, so it's not going to be right now. You know, and I think that really really makes a difference if you're just always aware of it and always know that it's you're not going to be in this body forever. And I think that's the important thing, so that we're not shocked or stunned, you know, when it happens and we suddenly find ourselves, you know, maybe looking down at our bodies laying in the middle of the street or something. That could be quite uncomfortable to find yourself without this thing, this container that you've become attached to all these years.
I can imagine one of the worst things is you pass on, you've left the body, but you're still floating around for a little bit, and you can see your loved ones, but you can't give them a hug. You can't tell them, I love you. I'll see you later.
Exactly.
But if you do, so I guess, I don't know, the lesson maybe is if you do that every day, tell them you love them and live with, you know, savoring every day, every moment, as none of us do, then might make it passing a little bit easier.
Yes, I think so. And meditating on our own death, it's an interesting meditation to do. I know that, you know, my mother always had it in her mind how she wanted to die. And so after I began practicing Buddhism, and I told her one time, I said, well, you just think about how you want to die. You think about that. And that's the way you'll die. Because even though she, you know, my mother always thought that my problem was I read too much and I had all these ideas that she didn't understand. So I told her, well, you just think about how you want to die. And, you know, and so she did. She had this idea how she wanted to die. And she wanted to die exactly where she was born, same county, you know, right, you know. And she did. And she never wanted to live to be 100. She didn't. She died the day after her 97th birthday. Because she kept feeling funny. She told my brother and I she was feeling funny. And so maybe that's a little bit of a clue. If we know we're going to die, you know, I don't know what she meant by feeling funny. She couldn't describe it. She said, I feel funny. She said, I'm feeling funny. And so, you know, maybe it was, you know, the vital energy, the life force, you know, starting to move upward and out. And that could have been very well been. So I think it's important to not that thinking about death is not a negative thing. It's something that shouldn't make people depressed or anything. But if you look at life fearlessly, then you're going to have a good death. I mean, you can't help but have a fearless death if you have a fearless life.
And how have you made plans to go?
I just figure it sort of feels like I'm just ready. It's weird because I've read so much about it. I've worked with the elderly all my life. I always loved elderly people, and now that I are one, I love them even more. So I think, you know, I think just being ready, you know, it's like not everybody gets to say, well, I want to die of this, but I don't want to die like this, and I don't want to die of that. But just being open, knowing that, you know, this isn't the first life, it's not the last life, and it'll go on.
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? We are more accepting that there are life after life now, but not so very long ago, there was this whole, it's the end, you've only got this one. So you either then go two ways on that, don't you? Well, if I'm only here now, might as well have a right good time. Be a rogue, or be so cautious that you're frightened. Again, this fear thing that you're frightened to express and explore, depending on the influences that are coming to you and through you. So yeah, it is interesting. We know that the Egyptians and the Tibetans both paid homage to dying. So it's because they wrote books about it. And I guess you've read them inside out. But I find that quite fascinating that the Egyptians, they knew, without any doubt, they knew that there was life after, and they tried to make preparations for that, mummifying the body. And I always thought that was a little bit weird until I read in our teachings that if you can actually stay attached to your physical, you can do preparations to stay attached to your physical remains, keep you anchored here, you can still have influence. And so that's an interesting for me.
Yeah, that's a new concept for me.
You know, puts a whole new slant on it. But the fact that there wasn't any doubt, that was accepted that there would be another life and a different, but another, and a real practical nuts and bolts life. So do you want to jump in here, Jack, about the...
Yeah, what is still a misunderstanding about, because death is promotion, you know, it's moving from downstairs to upstairs, and okay, we come downstairs again and upstairs again, but to want to stay here to keep influence is just, yeah, I can't, just trying to digest that, because... You know, when you go on to the astral plane, you know, you're lighter, you're faster, you can go on to the realm of just desserts. And
Right.
You experience what you want to experience in greater clarity.
Create your experiences. Everybody creates the life that they have. You know, our experiences. We draw experiences to us. And I think that not so much maybe that we stay here for influence, but in the Buddhist philosophy, and Buddhism is actually a philosophy or a science. It's actually a science of mind. It's very scientific. And we can choose to be a bodhisattva, which means we don't have a wish to move on to higher planes or higher realms or to come back in a higher a form, but we can choose to be a bodhisattva for the benefit of all. And that's really the higher being, you know, may I become a bodhisattva for the benefit of all. So maybe it's sort of like that, because you can come back and have that influence through being a bodhisattva, and you can help others through becoming a bodhisattva for the benefit of all. There's even a meditation where we say we are not going to desire nirvana or desire to live in the land of the gods until we have made sure that everybody has become, has reached that level that we want them to be free from the three poisons, you know, hatred, ignorance, and attachment. When we help people be free from the three poisons so that they too can reach that level. So it's kind of like that. You would have that influence on others, even though you have passed on, you can come back as a bodhisattva.
That's interesting. It ties in with our teachings. We have the nine freedoms. So it gives you the first three freedoms are bravery, love, and service. And then the next three are enlightenment, cosmic consciousness, and then ascension. And so when you ascend, you can choose to become a bodhisattva and stay here in this realm as a member of the spiritual hierarchy of Earth, or you can go on to a much greater experience as on another planet, as an interplanetary being. So yeah, that is what you're saying.
Going back to me, hopping on as I do. If you are a black magician, if you were a greedy, manipulative person, like let's say Cleopatra. And she was all for her own power and glory and not very nice, took slaves, et cetera, et cetera. Then she would know that she was going to quite a low level of vibration, because that's what she would need to do. And but we're told that, in fact, she did go into one of the lower hells, so below here, to actually experience what she'd given to other people. Now, if I knew that, if Cleopatra Deborah, if I knew that was going to happen, I would embalm my body fat. You wouldn't even believe it. So that I would have influence on this plane of existence, because I knew where I was going, because I knew what sort of life I had lived.
Right, right.
So there is that
interesting thought.
But you're just putting off the inevitable. I mean, you're...
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going up.
Silly Cleopatra.
That's because you can see Quint clear that halo. Just about here.
The ring light.
Yeah. Oh,
well, and you're right. I mean, you know, that higher energy, that higher vibratory energy is important. And you're right. People who are attached to the things of this world, the lower energy stuff, who engage in the lower energy stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be them, because you need to be in that higher energy. You need to be in those higher frequencies to really understand a lot of this. A lot of people don't even want to understand this kind of thinking. They just want to live their life and grab onto everything they can grab onto, power, money, whatever it is. And we're certainly seeing plenty of that in the world that we live in today, especially the power factor. People love to have power over other people. And, that lower vibratory energy certainly is very negative and can't lead to any place good, after this life, for sure.
Because we're told, Dr. King said in one of his lectures that most of the people here living on this physical plane have actually come up from level minus one. And in level minus one, the people there are the greedy, keep up with the Joneses, gotta have their nails done, he didn't say that. I make this bit, but the whole thing, you know, the greedy, the selfish, the grabbing, the manipulative. Most of them, and apparently level minus one, when he gave a lecture, was one of the most highly populated realms that there is. And so then they come, well, you're shaking your head because you don't agree.
I agree, but yeah, just the despair of it all.
Yeah. So when we see those people demonstrating the traits that you've just explained, we our best job we can do is try and lift their energy up to show them a better way, because we don't want them as body vessels. We don't want them going back down any further, because it drags everything down. So it's their opportunity to be way showers to the people that are looking to go back in that direction. I worked in a prison with people that were addicted to drugs and alcohol and obviously crime, because it all goes. And I could see where they were headed. You could see from the
right.
Just the way that they presented and lived their lives.
Right. And we often create the life we live. Nobody's out there making us be that way. We all create the life we have. And I think the more that we, that we accept life, embrace the higher things, embrace, the goodness. Nobody can make somebody do something they don't want to do. And some people will always prefer the lower energy stuff. Now, at some point, they may live a life that will alter that and change that. But, I always say, you never know another person's mind, and you can't always change another person's mind. You can try to help people. But even at that point, knowing how to help people with wisdom mind. And we often don't know how to help people. Sometimes in helping people, we actually make things worse. You have to help people with wisdom mind. But I gave up trying to actually tell people about how I felt. I mean, people just, until they're ready for it, when the student is ready, the teacher will come. When the student isn't ready, there is nothing you can tell people that will get them to change their mind or change their life until they are actually ready. And my youngest son was very much an alcoholic. He didn't want to live. Then I found out through a woman who was, she was actually the aunt of a good friend of mine who was a clairvoyant, and she told me that one of the reasons my youngest son had this terrible self-destructive energy about him, he was a suicide in his previous former life. And so when he got to be a teenager, we talked about it, but he had to go through a lot of stuff. He connected with a lot of suicides. He had several friends who committed suicide in high school. And now he's in his 40s, and he's doing really well for the last 10 years. He's really come around and come about, but then he was ready to know what the universe had to teach him. until then, there wasn't anything I could do. Nothing. Believe me, I tried saving that kid. Fuck, you wouldn't believe. Nothing would save him. And so I think that's so important to remember, too, that our past lives have a lot of influence on this life. And I think once he started understanding that on his own, not through anything I was teaching him, he went to a Buddhist refuge recovery, which is an alcohol and drug recovery program that's in all the major cities. And there wasn't anything I could tell him. He had to learn it himself. And when he learned it himself, then he was ready. And then he dropped all of that negative stuff. He dropped all that lower energy stuff, the alcohol. And he's a great person today. He's in his 40s. He's a great person.
You wrote this book, The Teacher Within, and that talk seems to talk a lot about, you know, this wisdom mind and
right.
We say in our teachings that ignorance is the only crime. And if you extrapolate that out, that yeah, everything is caused by ignorance. If you can find truth, and I know you've gone through, you know, you're a Christian, is that right? And then you were gone through a Mormonism, and then you know you're a Buddhist. So you're someone on the path for the quest.
Right, and I've studied everything, you know. Right. And you're right, you know, it's that teacher within. That is really one of the favorite little books, and it is a little book, but it's still available on Amazon. And it still sells, I think, because the problem is that people are always looking out there for something to save them. And maybe that has a lot to do with Christian religion, the idea that there's someone out there that is going to save you from your sins, whatever they perceive that to be. But of course, in Buddhist philosophy, ignorance is really the basic problem, one of the three poisons. But when you actually start going within and listen to that inner teacher, all the other stuff that we study, and you mentioned, I studied for the ministry for a while. I was raised to study for the ministry, went through Mormonism and then got out of that. And boy, I didn't get out. They showed me the door and kind of shoved me through it, you know. But all of those things are just they're just the breadcrumbs along the way, and you can pick up things along the way. Everything has something for you to learn. I have people say, "Oh well, I wouldn't want to do that. I could never be a Mormon. I could never do this or that," and yet, when you look back and you say, wow, I learned a lot. I tell people that I learned more about theology and about Christianity, really, about what people mean, you know, when they say, well, Jesus was very different and preached love. I learned more about that being a Mormon and seeing how that didn't work in that religion than I could have ever learned had I finished my Master's of Divinity degree. Because it's these experiences that guide you along, and everything that you see, that you read, that you look at, that you touch, is the breadcrumbs that helps you discover who you are within, and helps you listen to that inner voice. I think the one thing that really got me interested in that idea of the teacher within is when Jim Jones, I think, did he have the People's Temple, I think it was, down in Guyana? And when all of that went down, I was, you know, still a member of the Mormon Church. When all that went down, I started thinking, wow, how could people do that? Just because somebody came along and said, oh, I have all the truth. You know, follow me. I'll save you. And then I started looking at myself and I'm going, but that's what the Mormons told me. We have all of the truth that you need. Follow us. And so I started really looking into that and learning to embrace experiences and learn what these meant for me in my life. And I just kept on studying and learning. And like I said, I've studied all the major religions and some that aren't, like Gnosticism and so forth. And everything, and you get to this point, you know, I'll be 76 in another month. And you get to this point where you see the threads, they're like pearls on a string, you know. You get it, and you get it, and you say, oh, yeah, okay. And now you realize that all of this, all of these breadcrumbs, all these little pearls, the little pearls of great prize that get dropped along the way, even though you might have thought, oh, that doesn't mean anything. I don't like that. I don't want that. It was a pearl of great price that you add to the string and makes you who you are. And finally, you say, okay, I have my truth. And that, of course, and I'm still learning, still exploring. I love it. I'll never stop exploring. So I just found that was really the impetus behind writing that little book, The Teacher Within. So.
And you say it's still in print. Do people write to you and ask for your advice? Is that part of how you give service to the world at the moment?
Well, I can do that, or you know, the book is available, and people do write to me and ask about people were, I think, more curious about the Mormon thing, and that book is not in print, but it's free on my website. It's free to read. On my website, and it's called A Stranger in Zion. And because, of course, that's the Mormons believe that Utah is their Zion. And so I really, you know, it's funny because I teach a lot of classes at this adult learning center in a town not far from here. And I teach Gnostic class. I teach intro to Hinduism, intro to Gnosticism, intro to Buddhism, you know, all this, you know, philosophy. And we were teaching some of the pagan Gnostic works one time. I was teaching about, the origin of mankind and the origins of the world and alien man. And some really different pagan Gnostic creation stories. And they're very different from what people would say. People who were raised Christian might read in Genesis. And at one time, somebody asked me, she says, do you really believe this stuff? I don't believe everything I read, but everything I read adds these little pearls and gives me, you know, some knowledge. Now, Sri Aurobindo would say knowledge is just higher ignorance, but I think knowledge is a good thing. So it's been interesting to be able to help people to understand that you can walk a path that has very, very different, very different experiences, very different kinds of knowledge. You can go here, you can go there, but it's all just pearls on the string that will help you understand who you are and what your purpose is in life. And yeah, I do think part of my purpose has been to help people understand, you know, that, you know, life is not just one straight path. It's a lot of detours, but those detours are valuable, very valuable.
Mm. This podcast is primarily for members of the Aetherius Society and sympathizers. So when you read through some of the materials Deborah sent you and on the website, did you find any pearls in it?
Well, you know, I found some interesting, like you pointed out, there's some in connections, you know, with, say, the Eastern philosophies of Hinduism and Buddhism. And I think that's kind of throughout, you know, you look at things and you go, oh, well, that's interesting. Well, that's kind of like this. And you can kind of see how, you have the Theosophical Society, Theosophy was created. By Helena Blavatsky to be a synthesis of science and philosophy and religions. And I mean, all these religious and spiritual tradition, because she shows that everything, there's nothing out there that stands alone all by itself, or that I was talking to somebody just a couple of weeks ago and they were asking about the secret doctrine. And I said, she didn't write that. That's not something. I said, everything in there is things that people have said down through the ages, you know. And so I think that's the important thing. And we can absorb that material that we read from anything, whether it's from your website or, you know, other websites that, you know, maybe at first, what does this have to do with anything? But then you find out, wow, that is, it's all connected. It's all, yeah, we're kind of all here, kind of, you know, looking at the same thing. And it might mean something different, you know, it might mean something different to me than you because my experiences have been different. Or I have, studied and read maybe some different things that other people haven't. But we're all really connected. It's just, it's amazing. You know, we're just like, you know, we're all making this necklace of pearls.
Yeah. Well, there are all these bodhisattvas who I think are throwing down the pearls. I mean, sometimes, you know, it gets lost in translation or the reception's not so good. But it's all the same truth, but it's being dripped down from these bodhisattvas, exactly. The spiritual hierarchy of earth and the great religions. The great religions came from these great teachers, and they all say the same thing in different ways to a different audience, you know, because they were at different times throughout history and different levels of intelligence. And I mean, the secret doctrines is very complicated. the nine freedoms is in plain English. I mean, it's super
easy. It's good to have things in plain English.
I think they've run out of patience, and they said, look, all right, we're giving you the ending. Here you go. Because the time, you know, the credits are almost about to roll. So if you don't get it now, you're never going to get it.
The interesting thing, Claire, is that Richard Lawrence, who's our bishop in London, he's actually been developing his clairvoyance, clairaudience, psychic powers for many, many years and been very, very strict in that. And he has managed to channel people from higher levels. One of them was Madame Blavatsky.
Oh, really?
She brought through a message to him on the day that he was actually launching something called the Spiritual Freedoms Show, which is introducing the nine freedoms. And there's a podcast on it, but so I'm going to just again, Deborah's words. But what she basically said to Richard was that they were studying the nine freedoms. She was studying the nine freedoms. So it was almost like an endorsement of, get this out on your level because we're studying it here. And that was, and that for me was beautiful because as you've just said, they're everything, we're all making our own old pearl necklaces, but they're all intertwined. And so even that the lady that bought through the secret doctrine has said, we're studying this.
Well, she must have also studied the secret doctrines because it came through from the masters. So she must have also studied that. So she's a student, no? Of course she's going to study the nine freedoms. You know, she's a bit more interested in than us probably.
Well, nobody can understand it better than we can because we're told that there's many, many levels of depths of understanding, and they brought it right down to base level for people like me to be able to get onto the run and start to really think about it as well. It's just fabulous. And the more we speak to each other, like we have conversations, people like yourself, and we discuss religions, thoughts, experiences, all with love and all with connection. We're sending the right messages up to the mind belt, and we are lifting those vibrations. I'm convinced of it. It's good work. We need to celebrate the good work that we're all doing independently. And now we've got this fabulous resource, and I'm no IT person. Jack will tell you I am the bane of his life, but I do understand the importance of getting online, speaking to people. We would have never seen each other 20 years ago, not a chance.
That's true.
Here we are today having a conversation, sharing views, which other people can pick up or they can leave. That's okay. But we're sharing our truth in an open and loving way. And I think that's just fabulous.
That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way we're all going to, you know, be able to do, like you said, and really raise the consciousness of all the anybody we come in contact with, is raise their consciousness to a higher level. And it doesn't always come by just, you know, teaching them, you know, this and this and this. It's just the way we are being around them, the energy that is produced. And I know I had a real aversion to doing Zoom things, you know, but when, you know, I first started doing everything on Zoom because I need people. I need to feel their energy. I like standing up in front of a crowd, you know, and you know, and talking, and you know, because I feel you feel the energy of all those people in the room. But after now doing a lot of Zoom things over the past 3 years, it's like, wow, you know, I do feel that energy. You know, I don't really have to be there in person. And I think that's the important thing. We all give off this, you know, an energy. Negative people give off negative energy. The positive, loving people who really want to help others give off this energy, even though it's on Zoom. It's like great energy, you know.
Like great. And it's like when we're sending prayers out, we don't see the person that we're sending. If we send it to the world, well, what does the world look like? Well, we know what the, you know, a globe, but actually when we're sending the energy, you feel it go out. It's right. Got to go somewhere. So it goes with the intention of thought and with the openness of heart. And so right. While we're doing that, it can only raise what we're giving is people, we're giving people a little bar. That's what I think. Yeah.
An energy bed. A good energy bed.
Yeah. Just try it.
You're right. That's for sure. And I think that's so important. People don't understand how vital it is to know the collective consciousness and be able to tap into the collective consciousness of people. Because, you know, Rupert Sheldrake talks a lot about the non-locality idea. And I don't know if you've ever seen any of his work. He did a video, actually more of a documentary on do dogs know when their owners are coming home? And it's really interesting because when you really tap into the collective, everybody gets these messages. Even dogs know when their owners are coming home. And he calls this non-locality. You know, when you've been thinking about somebody and maybe praying for them, sending them blessing, that sort of thing, they get it. They get it. Sometimes you're thinking about somebody and all of a sudden they call you or they email you. And you go, someone's just thinking about you. And I think that tapping into that collective is so important because people are very distracted nowadays. And to be able to understand that there is something bigger all around us and that we all are content into that, no matter how far away we are, we can tap into that universal consciousness that allows us to feel the one in the many in the one, as Aurobindo would say. So,
yeah, it seems like we studied so many of the same things. I had Rupert Sheldrake on my other podcast, and he was a great guest. And these are the days, just going back to what we said earlier about the levels, and these are the days that the pearls are really being thrown to the swine, and that the things which were maybe in the, in the Buddhist literature or the Bhagavad Gita, there's a lot of coding, you know, but now we know that that each chakra is a realm of consciousness. So there's level, you know, the root, we're at the root chakra in level one and level two, and there's four below in the root chakra. And so that's when we pass on, we go to these levels. And just to bring it back to about how to die well, if you die in an accident, for example, I think Deborah told me just before the show that you go, if you're going up, it takes a lot of time on level two, a lot of healing to get you restored. I've seen in the movie Astral City, the Brazilian movie, based on the teachings of the, they called the religion there. It'll come to me in a minute. But yeah, so you have a lot of healing and then you can move on to a higher level. So yeah, it's really, really interesting to think about all these things and prepare for our final time around.
Yeah, it is very important. It is. And I think that, you know, to believe that everything here is permanent and real and, you know, that never changes, everything changes. It's been the one thing that my studies of the quantum physicists.
How much stuff have you studied? Yeah, you're making me look bad here. This is... Oh, and I've been studying quantum physics as well. Okay, all right, carry on.
It's very.
Really? You read a lot. You read a lot, Claire.
I do. My mother always told me my problem was I read too much. But yeah, it's very parallel to Buddhism, especially if you read. The Dalai Lama, he's always been interested in quantum physics. And so that's what actually got me into, you know, reading Blavatsky and knowing, okay, she mentions all this science stuff. Well, I never thought of science in connection with religion. But then when you study Buddhism, it's not really a religion. It's more of a philosophy. It's actually a science. And so I think that... study again, it's those pearls, it's that connection. It's like
you should read this one. I mean, it's Jesus says, science without religion is the soulless wanderer of the night. He said that in his latest teachings.
Yeah. So it's but it's all been interesting, and I love it. I love talking about it. I love, you know, I love my teaching and I love writing. So, and hopefully people will enjoy what I write and maybe learn a little bit, maybe learn where their own path is.
Definitely. And how to prepare for a good death. One of our other guests told us about, she's psychic and she can see people who haven't made it to the light yet. And apparently in target toilets or in public toilets, there's a lot of people hanging around. They haven't been able to get out because of the piping or something with the electromagnetic frequencies in the water, apparently. So, yeah, preparing for a death, at the very least, it helps avoid you getting stuck in public toilets would be a big endorsement. No?
You should finish this on that note, Jack.
No, I really brought it down, didn't I? I apologize.
Hey, what's up? You're gonna public toilets really quick.
Imagine you're at the funeral. You know, you're burying Uncle Sid, and then he's actually trapped in the toilet. Yeah. Cremate me.
Well, you know, you have sense of humor about all this stuff, right?
You do. Yeah, exactly. So where can people find out more about you and read your books and keep in touch with you?
Well, they can go to my website, which is just ClaireGoldsberry.com. Claire, C-L-A-R-E, no I. And all one word. They can look me up on Amazon. They can look me up on Substack. You know, just I'm around.
Still. Wonderful. All right. Well, this has been great. And if people want to learn more about the Aetherius Society, they can go to aetherius.org. Thank you very much, Claire.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
That's you. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thank you.